Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
You're with Open House. Rising work stress and unemployment, farmers suiciding, and rural towns dying, species extinction and climate chaos. Kinds of problems being triggered by economic globalisation, according to a new documentary which proposes another way. It's called The Economics of Happiness. The film's producer and co-director, Helena Norberg Hodge, is an environmental pioneer and director of the International Society for Ecology and Culture. She says the push for big business to get bigger is only making the world's problems worse. But, she says, there is a solution, and it's called localization, and she joins us now. Helena, thanks very much for joining us on Open House.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you. How do you find, just briefly, economic globalization, and what are some of the ways that you think it's changed the world?
Well, I should add that I've studied globalization with a group of economists, writers, activists from around the world for the last 20 years. And we've discovered that literally on every continent and virtually every country, as governments are deregulating trade and finance, they're basically rolling out the red carpet for business to become bigger and bigger. And that means that as a business, you're forced essentially either to merge or die. And with this merging, what's happening is that as businesses go more global, they have to look for the cheapest labor. And looking for the cheapest labor is something that's becoming a faster and faster endeavor. They'll go into countries, and then as the prices go up, they'll abandon, you know, whole populations that have become dependent on jobs with these big corporations. And also there's a dynamic where governments are being encouraged and are, you know, going way back, they are constantly subsidizing business to use more energy and technology, and to basically they're punished when they employ people. So there's this deep dynamic that's being exacerbated by globalization, which is this process of deregulating trade and finance.
And we've seen enormous upheaval in terms of employment. Jobs are becoming more and more scarce. Mind you, at the same time, there are jobs opening up in other sectors of society, but you're arguing that people are especially being made to feel unhappy.
Yes, first of all, you know, as we say, jobs are being opened up. We have to realize, I mean, you look at it from a global point of view, that without a doubt, the end result is a loss of jobs, a net loss. And that's because people who are producing the most basic things that we need, especially food, are being destroyed literally by the millions. And as they're pushed into cities looking for work that's dependent on energy, on industrial production, or in the information sector, those jobs are very limited. And so the end result is a loss of jobs, and there's this tremendous fear of not being able to compete, and so the pressure on children is extending all the way down to kindergarten in most countries, as parents are afraid that their child won't do well and they're being pushed harder and harder. And so the result of all that stress is tremendous unhappiness, because it goes along with these time pressures and competitive pressures that leave very little time for the things that virtually every culture say is important to them, and that is family, friends, community. Good relationships with other people is what people universally value and need, and those relationships are suffering.
We could argue, though, that for decades and probably even centuries, the business sector has been replacing people with machines and technology. Big business would say, so what's wrong with that?
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think that it is really important to recognize that there are many areas where technology makes a lot of sense. And I can, you know, I think all of us would recognize that there are many activities where it makes sense to replace people. But I think what's interesting is that in order to really understand the process, you know, I had my eyes thrown open to this by going into this very ancient culture on the Tibetan Plateau. And so what I've seen is that when you had you know, huge monocultures with slaves in them who were standing all day picking cotton or whatever they might be doing, then bringing in a machine to replace them really made sense. You know, they were doing monotonous work on these giant farms that were producing only one thing. But what I've seen in these traditional cultures is that when you have much smaller scale agriculture where people are producing a range of things, just like on the sort of old-fashioned McDonald farm, you know, where you had lots of different animals and vegetables and grain and a variety of products, then the work is not so monotonous. And in fact, you can't replace people with machines so easily. And what I'm very heartened by is that there is a new farmers' movement throughout the industrialized world now, actually not only the industrialized world, where young people are finding that they enjoy that kind of farming. A smaller scale, more diversified, the work is not the same thing from day to day. And when it's linked to local markets, or in any case markets closer to home, to smaller middlemen and shops or farmers markets, they can actually do really well financially as well. And basically, I'm really hoping that people will wake up to the fact that we need to start shifting subsidies and taxes to support more diversified farming.
Yes, and in terms of population movements as well, there's been this mass migration away from rural areas to the big cities all around the world.
Exactly.
Which has huge implications for both the rural areas and the big cities.
Exactly. And it's so sad because, you know, now the choice for most people is either to live in a remote, marginalized rural town or region, or in a giant city that is just too crowded, too polluted, too competitive. Whereas with different policies, we could start supporting the revitalization of smaller towns. And so it wouldn't be a question of, you know, necessarily no cities, you know, or what we have today. It's a question of a better scale, a better management, and above all, a better relationship between town and country. We've really got to value the work of farmers. I mean, for me, I think, you know, it's the, absolutely the heart of localization is the recognition that when people produce our food, they are producing the only thing that every person on the planet needs every day of the year. The only thing we produce as human beings that is needed every day. And of course, it's better if it's fresh. It's better if it comes from closer to home.
Yes.
Doesn't mean no trade, but it means let's not import oranges to Australia when there are oranges here. Let's not import wheat from Europe, which is happening in Australia, while exporting wheat to Europe. Let's save all that energy and let's keep the basic food security such that all around the world people can get a staple diet from closer to home. If we did realize that that would create more secure jobs, a healthier environment, and more jobs in a stable and sustainable way, I think we would see tremendous changes throughout all of society.
Two things leap to my mind. It will involve a lot of educating communities. And also, what do we do to our and about our dependence on oil?
Well, this is the point, you see. I mean, people are realizing now that this dependence on oil is problematic because of global warming, but also because as the demand for oil grows around the world, as the rural economy is destroyed and millions of people move into the cities, they become dependent on transport for their daily bread. If we start shortening distances, support the revitalization of smaller towns, we can dramatically reduce our dependence on oil. And in fact, we can reduce our dependence on energy generally. As we shorten distances, we not only reduce the need for transport, but for packaging, refrigeration, irradiation, all kinds of very costly and energy-intensive practices. We reduce our need for plastic, which, as many people now know, you know, it's choking the sea. It actually turns out to be far more harmful for our health than we thought. So we can reduce that waste. And again, I just want to reiterate that localization is not about having everything coming from a mile away.
No.
And it's not about complete self-reliance. but it's about rebuilding a better balance.
Can you tell us some of the communities that are pushing for change and moving ahead with some good results? What are some examples you can give us?
Yeah, I think maybe one of the most exciting is something called Transition Towns, which started in Totnes in England, where we lived too, and we helped to get it launched. And it started off with local food initiatives, with people in the town linking up with farmers in the region, setting up a farmers market, something that in my organization we've helped to happen all around the world, even in Australia. And then the transition town concept is basically that people in the town are getting together to figure out how can they reduce their dependence on fossil fuels and energy. And it's about localizing. It's about supporting smaller local businesses, not just farmers, but independent small businesses. Because what they've realized is that when you shop in an independent local business as opposed to a chain, you actually keep the money circulating in the local economy. It generates more jobs, it generates more wealth and prosperity, and it starts to rebuild the sense of community and interdependence. So one example, a study that was done in America, you know, looked at the, when you bought a book from a chain store as compared to buying it from a local independent shop, they found that if you spent $100 in the chain store, only 13 stayed in the local economy, but in the independent shop, $45 stayed in the local economy. Mm. And that was because that business was employing local accountants, local advertisers, and so you had this spin-off effect. So the transition town movement has now grown into several thousand towns around the world following this example. It's all very small, it's grassroots, but it is reaping benefits. It is definitely showing that you can increase the number of jobs, increase prosperity locally, while reducing the environmental impact, particularly the need for energy. So it's very, very important that people know more about this.
It's a very thought-provoking set of ideas and film. Helena Norberg-Hodge, thank you so much for joining us on Open House tonight.
Thank you.
She's the producer and co-director of the film, The Economics of Happiness. The film has been screening around Melbourne and Sydney in the last couple of weeks. Another screening this Thursday night at Rosebank in Sydney. You can get more details at www.theeconomicsofhappiness.org.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.